But if there are other members of the public who wish to speak, they may be heard during the public comment of the meeting. Let me just start, so what we have here, let me just introduce the folks who are here. Joe Mariana is the county administrator, and then we have members of the committee are Jason Leifer, Judge Betty Poole, Mark Solomon, Judge Glenn Galbraith, and myself. I'm Ray Schlatter, and I'm the chair. So why don't we begin? First of all, we have the approval of the September 16th minutes. We received one copy, and then I circulated a second copy that had what I believe were the typos corrected. I'm sure there are a few that weren't corrected, but we have a motion of further comment. We have a motion by Judge Poole, and a second.
I'll second.
Second by Judge Galbraith. Any further comment, corrections? If there are typos or other corrections, give them to Joe, and he'll make those corrections. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right, so now we're going to open up to public comment. If anybody would like to speak for a couple of minutes about any particular item, other than the judges will get a longer period of time. So is there anybody, public comment? Anybody like to speak? All right, so we'll move on.
Ray, I'm not public, but I, for the record, I'd
better
like
better than public. Right.
I'd like to state that I spoke with the new president of the New York State Magistrates Association, the Honorable Judge Harold Bauman, B-A-U-M-A-N, and I'm going to be sending him an email. Hopefully he will be speaking at the overflow meeting on November 18th.
Okay.
Where is he a judge?
I'm not sure what town he's the president of the New York State Magistrates now, so.
Perfect. Oh, that'd be great. We do fully expect that there will be further opportunity for judges to speak, because obviously this is an extremely important issue for this entire community, and I think the judiciary has probably the greatest amount of information that can be plugged into this discussion, and it'll be very helpful to us. And we've now just been also joined by Liz Thomas, who is also the supervisor from the town of Ulysses, and she's also a member of the committee. So here we are. All right. Chair report. There's nothing to report other than we're still trying to sign up some law interns to help us with some of the work that will be necessary as we go forward. Joe, any staff report?
No, that was it. The interns, we're still talking to interns, and also just housekeeping. I do have copies of the agenda here if anybody who's in attendance would like an agenda. And I also brought copies of the minutes from last week, or last meeting. So if anybody wants a hard copy, we have that as well.
Are these the minutes, Joe?
That's the agenda.
Joe, are the ones that you're passing out, are they the ones that were corrected?
I believe they're the ones that you corrected, right?
Okay.
Good. I'll also say in advance, I'm going to have to leave at 5:30 to go to a budget meeting. Paula Younger will be here to make sure that we're taking good notes and watching the tape recording.
All right. So why don't we put we do have at least a handful of judges who would like to speak this evening. And Joe, I think what I'd like to do is, could you sit at the far end, because we'd like the judges to
Absolutely.
Sit right here.
Sit.
And Liz, if you could, or yeah, because there's some chairs over here if you want to sit here. Who would like this, any of the folks from the judiciary would like to speak, please. Have a seat right along this side right here. Why don't we put everybody on at the same time, and we'll... And by the way, we're not so formal. This will not preclude anybody else from jumping in at some point. That makes sense. Is there anybody else who would like to join the panel and offer some comments?
No, they're not minutes. They're my remarks.
Okay, and now joining us also, everybody knows, the District Attorney Gwen Wilkinson is also a member of the committee, and she is here. And so let the record reflect that Judge Scott Miller is out of town and is excused from appearing today. So is there anybody else who wants to jump into this discussion? Any of the other...
Judge Ravel, were you going to speak?
Any of the
speakers, if you could have a seat.
If you could come up and have a seat. I'm sorry, perhaps you couldn't hear me. I'm sorry about these.
No, I'm sorry, because I hadn't prepared.
It doesn't have to be prepared.
I know you have a deadline of August 29th.
You didn't need to prepare.
You suddenly got shy.
Okay. So why don't... what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself and then speak, and then we will do them one at a time. And after all of the speakers have spoken, then we will do some questioning, all right? So, Judge Chernish, if you want to start, please.
Good afternoon. Yes, I'm William Chernish, better known to many of you as Bill. I'm a town justice in Newfield, and I don't stand on honorifics like honorable or professor or doctor, but Bill Chernish. One of the 18 or so Tompkins County town and village justices who were thought to be unqualified by the expert panel that appeared before you all 2 weeks ago. I hope to give a different view today. Before doing so, let me point out the several areas I'd like to address in my short time. First is a matter of ethics. The second is how we, or more specifically, I got here. Third is a matter of qualifications. And I do have some additional copies of my remarks that I'm sort of going to read. The qualifications to sit as a town or a village justice. And third is organizations of the courts that are closest to the people. Some other areas that I've had experience with this exercise and then a question of incremental change. First, the matter, of judicial ethics. As a sitting town justice, I am bound to a set of ethical considerations that really preclude me from speaking too broadly. I take those considerations very seriously, and to that end, I reached out to the Advisory Committee on Judicial Ethics for advice on what I might be able to say here today. And I received citations from 7 previous cases which the advisory committee had addressed. Each of those said it was okay to talk about issues which affected my job or consolidations which affected my job, but none of those decisions went much broader than that. So I'm going to try to confide my comments to that fairly narrow position. And I have to say that my integrity and my ethical integrity is something that I value in all aspects of my life, and I have seldom had anybody question that, so it's imperative, it importance to me. Now, I think it's also important to note that I was elected to this job, was elected by the citizens of the town of Newfield to serve as a town judge. I was first appointed to fill a role that was vacated by a lawyer judge who died and was then elected to serve under the rules, the state of the law, and the Constitution of the state of New York. So this is a constitutional position. Back in December of last year, I received a call from Kerry Blakinger, who some of you know and have had interactions with, who was reporting and was developing a story for the Ithaca Times regarding the county administrator's work with the Council of Governments. And it was on the issue of creating this task force. Because of the ethical considerations that I just noted, I did not comment for her story. But in a subsequent conversation with the county administrator, he laid out what he hoped to see as the outcome of this process. There seemed to be two large questions that I gleaned as a result of that conversation. One was the organization of the courts and the qualification of the judges, which seemed to be the same two questions we see here today. In my mind, the objectives were clear, and the reportage that Ms. Blakinger laid out reflected those two objectives. presentations on September 16th from the experts. We had two defense counsel representatives as well as a representative of the county courts. The opinions of those three gentlemen were unanimous in their reviews, their views with respect to qualifications. Lawyers only. I find it incredulous to accept the position that only those admitted to the guild are qualified to oversee matters involving small claims, summary judgments, evictions, motor vehicle infractions, misdemeanors, and arraignments for felonies. We already have a system where felonies are kicked up to county courts very quickly. Having completed a formal curriculum of law on passing the bar, in my view, does not necessarily demonstrate competence as a jurist. This judge is certainly not typical of my fellows in the town and village court level. I wrote a master's thesis. It was 200 pages on the merger of United and Capital Airlines, a labor relations issue. I guess it gained a good issue of the Railway Labor Act. My doctoral thesis examined collective bargaining practices in more than a dozen companies involved in coalition bargaining. I got a good understanding of the National Labor Relations Act. I've taught business law and labor law classes at the university level. Some of my fellow judges have extensive backgrounds in law enforcement or other relevant areas. So let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater. The second large question here is organization at the local courts. The preordained goal of this task force seemed to charge the elimination of town and village courts in the county with the establishment of a district court. In my view, this requires very serious examination from the standpoint of operational issues, cost issues, human aspects. It's a major undertaking with serious implications. In my town, town of Newfield, do we have too many judges in Newfield now? Maybe. Could the town save money and operate more efficiently with one judge instead of two? Maybe. The clerical load would remain the same. Would such a reduction hold in other towns? That remains to be examined by those other towns. Maybe there's some other kind of consolidation that could take place. Would the creation of a district court result in more even justice, savings of money, savings in time? If there's a new courthouse located near the current facilities where we are, it would certainly be convenient to the Warren of defense law offices now in the downtown area. Would save commute time for those lawyers. Is this district court going to assume all the functions and activities of the town and village courts? This mean arraignments, pretrial hearings, summary judgments, small claims, vehicle traffic matters, all those things to be brought down here? I doubt that would be convenient for all the participants in that. Now, on Monday, I was at the New York State Magistrates Association's 106th annual conference. It was in Niagara Falls. Just wrapped up at noon today. This organization represents town and village justices from across the state. There were 500 of us in attendance. When I raised the topic of this subject from this task force at a roundtable discussion, at which there were a number of senior members, several former presidents, it was evident, abundantly evident, this matter has already been discussed and the issue has been raised in a number of other venues in previous times. So we're not cutting new territory here. I do hope and I expect that a representative of the New York State Magistrates will be invited and will be invited with sufficient time to be able to present a comprehensive view of what has happened in the past. And I hope that the task force will seek the views of the Office of Court Administration. This judge does believe that there are many areas for improvement in functioning of the local court system. And that can be made by working together locally, and some can be made by adapting technology, which is now available to the rest of the world. And I'm happy to discuss any of these and my ideas, as they may be limited by that number one, judicial ethics. So with that, I thank you.
All right, thank you, Judge Finch. And just so you're aware, and I'm not sure that everybody realizes, we did have a representative of the Office of Court Administration on this committee. There were some concerns raised that by being on the committee, it forecasts a bias in one way or another, and therefore Justice Mulvey advised us about a month or so ago that there was no longer going to be a representation on the committee, but I appreciate that. Who would like to go to Susan? Yes, please.
Susan Barr, Town of Caroline. I think that whatever happens is not going to happen quickly, and I think the legislature now needs to consider the fact that your report did a great deal of damage to the judges. We all read that you think we're fools and incompetent. We all read that. And it's problematic, and I think we need to face up to that. Because we gotta figure something out now. You put us in a very difficult position. Judges walk into our courtroom and we look at them and we go, so what did you say at these meetings? I'm very disappointed that the attorneys think that only attorneys can read law and study law. There's been a long tradition of reading law and becoming a lawyer through practice. And I do respect law school. I respect that, I know that when I'm in court, I'm talking to a state trooper who had to go through a year of training and a lawyer that had to go through 3 years of training. And I respect that. But to just wipe out my whole background and my experience and say it's not sufficient, when my town deemed it sufficient, I just kind of question that. And we've already heard one judge's background. My mother was an assistant district attorney. My uncle and my grandfather were both judges. And I chose to get an engineering degree. And then I got an MBA. And I think engineering is actually very similar to law. You have to be very meticulous. There's a lot of similarities. And I was commissioned as an Army officer. And the UCMJ system the Army uses is very similar to the lowest court level here in state of New York, and I administered Article 15, and I actually had experience doing this before I was elected. And I think to dismiss my life experiences and dismiss the work I've put in, I've been taking, and I understand their online classes, but I took constitutional law from the University of Pennsylvania, and I took common law from the University of London, and I'm doing everything I can to grow in wisdom. And I study, and then to dismiss that and say there's absolutely nothing I can do to be competent in the eyes of the committee, that really hurts. And you need to think about what you said to us. But as far as my opinions about town judges, it's very similar to what I did in the Army. The lowest level of administration of justice was done by non-lawyer judges. And to me, it's like an LPN. You don't need a doctor for everything. I don't think you need a lawyer judge to handle speeding tickets. I think we can knock that stuff off for you. I don't think you need a lawyer judge for some small claims court. My first small claims case was a damage to road equipment. And I said, great, I'm an engineer officer. I'm ready to listen to your case. I actually driven that equipment. I know how to do it. I interrupted a lot, asked for parts, part names. So I brought experience in my background in that lent itself exactly to that case. So the point that I think we can handle the small stuff. And I actually think it's a waste of a lawyer judge's time to do all that. You don't have to have a law degree to do speed tickets. But my third point is that I always believe in local. I believe in local schools. I don't think we should shut all the schools and bus everybody to Ithaca because they've got the best school. I don't think we should shut all the... I don't think we should not have stores out in the towns anymore. We should bus everybody into Ithaca because that's where the superior stores are. I've always fought for local. I like small schools. My kids went to a small school, and I like that. I fight to keep things local. We don't have a lot of domestic violence, I don't think, in the town of Caroline. I call them family brawls. You know, they bring them in, and I'm reading the charge sheet, and five different people are swinging at each other, and the guy in hand irons in front of me is bleeding because his mom just whacked him with an ashtray. But we know these people. We live out here. I think we lend something that it's our neighborhood and these are our neighbors. So I would encourage you to reconsider. And I would also encourage you to think about the words that you said to my colleagues. And how are we going to continue functioning when we've just been called incompetent? I think that's a very difficult position now.
I do want to clarify, and I don't mean to get into a discussion, but I...
Yeah, please do, because we've made no report.
We've made no... I thought we were trying to be very, very clear in the letter we sent. We've been charged with examining what should be done, what could be done, if appropriate. We have not drawn any conclusions, and this committee, I think it's very clear from all of the discussion that has occurred heretofore. The committee has been extremely, not only careful, but frankly, genuinely uncertain as to where we will land. And the whole point of this exercise is to talk to town judges, talk to participants, talk to lawyers, talk to every prosecutors, probation officers, talk to everybody involved in the system, police officers, and try to get as much information as possible so that we can make, frankly, not only intelligent, but informed decisions. So the fact that the conversation is happening should not be construed as a prediction or a forecast of where it is going, because we don't know where it's going.
This, excuse me for interrupting you, but this committee has not said town justices are incompetent.
So there were some people, some attorneys then said that.
No, at the last meeting we took testimony from Judge Raleigh, who had some opinions, and from a fellow by the name of Jonathan Gratis, who is the head of the New York State Public Defenders Association, who had an opinion, and then from Kevin Kelly, who frankly works for what we call Neighborhood Legal Services. So that's the only thing that has happened thus far in terms of getting testimony. We have received letters from a number of people. We've received comments from attorneys. We've received comments from town judges, and we have received comments from legislative folks, but it's just all part of the information gathering, and our whole intent is whatever we receive, we're going to put up on our website so everybody can read it, so everybody can be on the same page. There's no hidden agenda anywhere. There's no inclination in one way or the other. In other words, there's been no determination. There's been no discussion in that sense at all. So I know that, I mean, our whole intent is to try to avoid misinformation. We want this to be as transparent and as open and as free-flowing as possible so that everybody hears what everybody else is saying. And nobody, other than maybe, you know, an opinion from one person would be stronger in this direction, just as Judge Chernish, or your opinion is strong in another direction. That's what a discussion is all about.
Report are you referring to, Judge?
I got an email, and it said, I guess it was somebody testifying at another meeting.
Okay. Was it an email from somebody who was present at the meeting?
Yes, I think.
It was from Judge Rowley.
Well, I see a comment in here also from this Mr. Gratis, so I don't know who he is. But he says here something to
the head of the New York State Defenders Association.
But there are also judges who are not qualified, citing several situations in other counties. Poor quality can't be ignored. Without examples, I guess it's hard to generalize like that. So perhaps that's what you might have heard.
That is not a report of this committee.
We could restructure so that what is actually good is retained and what is illicit, that's a heavy word, is
well,
removed.
People are entitled to their opinions, are
illicit
they not?
Is a person. Well, I'm just trying.
The question
I'm not
was,
here to
what
argue.
Was, what was the report? It's been made clear there was
what
no
I'm
report.
Saying is clearly, though, the judge may have been, you may have been told something about comments like that,
which are
almost out of line, comments like that. But
I just want to note that you can actually listen to the words that we heard from Jonathan Gratis and Judge Raleigh. The audio is up on the
what I can still sort of say, up on the website now, and the minutes.
Minutes were just approved tonight, so
minutes will be approved
page.
Tonight. You will be able to read it in their entirety. You'll be able to hear every word they used as it was said to us. This didn't come from us. It was given to us. So it's part of the testimony that's being given, just as every word you guys say in here tonight is part of the testimony. There's not a preordained conclusion
what,
here.
What is the website, please?
It's on the county's webpage. So if you go to Tompkins County's webpage, if you look at the lower left-hand corner, you'll see a reference to the Municipal Courts Task Force. If you click that, it takes you right to that page. And then you'll find reference to the audio of the last meeting.
Okay. Of course, many of us went to the former meeting room, not knowing that it had been changed to here, even. Mr. Chair, if I may, the communication that was cited by my co-judge was probably among the first that many of us had seen. It had been preceded by a number of articles in the Ithaca Times, which cited the objectives that were set out by the county administrator, which clearly went to the two objectives that I met.
We also mentioned. We also sent a letter to every single judge, I'm assuming most each of you received that, where we outlined exactly what this committee was, what our charge was, what our hope was in terms of getting input, and I think I can't control what's in the media, nor do I want to control what's in the media. We live in this
Agreed.
Wonderful country where we're allowed to have our own opinions, and sometimes they rub us the wrong way, but that's the way it is.
Agreed.
But what the committee has been, but we're not here. That's fine. I think we're all on the same page. So let's hear from the next judge. And let's
Harold Phoenix, Town Justice, Town of Caroline. I want to read an excerpt out of a Century of Service, Dedication, and Justice published published by the State Magistrates Association. As for district courts, the system has been tried in Nassau and Suffolk counties and is found far from economical. In Nassau County, a district court judge is paid $25,000 a year, and the taxpayers must also provide the funds for a costly staff. Despite this, the backlog of cases in the district courts is reportedly astronomical. In the rural townships and villages, the justice court system has served us well. If there should ever be a change to district court system, it should be by referendum, by the will of the people, and not by constitutional change. There are too many movements abroad today in this land which seek to destroy certain basic precepts of our government. To destroy the justice courts would play directly into their hands, but to preserve them is to save a cornerstone of our heritage and freedom. And I just want to make sure that you people understand that this is not going to be an easy task. You're going to have one courtroom with one judge, as I assume. And how many people are you going to have to run that? Where are you going to house all the people? You haven't got room in Tompkins County Jail now for the ones we got, right? So, you know, I think it's I think we're way off looking at something like that.
Thank you. Mrs. Ravo?
Thank you, Mr. Slaughter. My name is Jules Ravo. I'm one of two town justices in the town of Dryden. I was appointed by the town board in Dryden in April of 2014 and then was elected to a full four-year term in November. The interesting thing about sitting in the local court, one thing I discovered right away was as the appointed judge, there was a certain level of attention or respect, but following the election, things, to me at least, or certainly the perceptions, changed dramatically. And when I found out that I was going to have opposition in the election, I was kind of disappointed, saying, oh, I'm going to have to do some work now. In fact, this time last year, that's what I was doing, was going door to door throughout the Dryden community. The thing about all of that was, I was told by a gentleman who was a politician who said, this is what elections are about. You're going to get out into the Dryden community and you're going to learn every corner of that community if you do it the right way and try to get elected by going out and meeting the people in your community. And so that's essentially what I did, probably more from the fact that I was afraid of losing. I didn't want to lose the election. I wanted to win the election. So I did get out to every corner of Dryden. I went to roads that I had never, ever, that I didn't even know existed in Dryden. I live in the northwest corner of Dryden, and I went down in the village and met all the people in the village and talked to the senior citizens at the McDonald's week after week, and went out to Ellis Hollow, which I didn't even know was a part of Dryden when I started. So I did all of that and learned every road. And then I met somebody at a party one night and I said, oh, you live in Dryden, where do you live? They said, oh, you've never heard of the road. I said, try me. So they told me the road they lived on and I said, I was on that road. I can't believe I didn't come to your house that day. You must have been a Democrat. I was going to visit all the Republicans. But the point of all that was the gentleman that told me this back in August, he had been through some of his own political wars. He said, this is what it's all about, is learning your community, you know? So now, when people come in, traffic tickets, even a lot of criminal stuff, you know, I hear where they live, what they do, and I can really relate to it. And I think it's certainly just in a short period of time made me a much more effective judge. Plus, I know Dryden now. And when you look at, I mean, you could, a good example would be, say, the county court election 2 years ago. We had four or five candidates, whatever it was, all running in a Democratic primary. So it was kind of like, well, you know, a small amount, very small amount of people actually came out to vote, and they selected a judge for the next 10 years. Now, did the candidates get out to those roads in Dryden or other places in the community to get to know their communities? Absolutely not. Obviously, you can't do that, you know. And I think in a way, one of the problems we have now is by assuming that somehow attorneys are somehow big time qualified to be the judge. Because I think what you would have in a district court setting is you would have very few people want to take on the cost of trying to run a campaign. And I don't think there's really anybody capable of running a campaign at the county level or half of a county level that you could run at the local level in meeting people. And I think, like for me, that's made me a much better judge, given me a lot more perspective. Now, I've been an attorney for 36 years. I tried cases throughout the New York metropolitan area for 25 of those years. And when I walked onto the bench, I realized all of that may have one way or another given me some insight and give me some abilities to deal with written work or certain legal problems. But on the other side, I also found that I really knew nothing about being a judge. And I'm only beginning to learn that now. So, but the actually thing that I wanted to start to talk about, or what I wrote down when I read some of the comments or some of the questions, was one thing I discovered in meeting all of the other town judges was just how capable and how dedicated all of the judges were to delivering justice and fairness in their communities, and how familiar they were, like I became, with my community. I also saw right away that everyone had a tremendous amount of experience. I work with a judge who's been on the bench for 23 years, and I don't think you can replace that experience or just assume that somebody who now decides or who has been aching to run for some district court judge somehow is going to come in there and suddenly deliver justice. First of all, they don't know the community, and they're not going to learn the community. Whereas we have a lot of people here who really do know the community. I work with Judge Clausen, and I draw on his experience and expertise every day. You know, now I've been practicing law for 36 years, but I'm learning something new from my fellow judge all the time. Same thing, I've called four or five judges on certain situations that I've had. And their knowledge and expertise is far beyond, like, reading here Mr. Gratis's testimony, and even Judge Raley. I have to respectfully disagree with Judge Raley as well. The knowledge and experience and what Bill said earlier about the idea that, lawyers get into their small little niche somewhere, and life experiences is not necessarily part of that niche. You have people now from all parts of the community who have tremendous life experiences. Another point, too, I went up and watched one of the fellow judges. I was invited there. I didn't go to watch him on purpose. I was invited there when I first went on the bench. And I watched him try a summary proceeding with two lawyers who both were relatively experienced lawyers. And what I found that was interesting was I felt the judge, our local judge, had a much better command of the rules of evidence than the attorneys that were trying the case. And these weren't, you know, novices. These were two guys who were hired, who were collecting some probably, well, whatever. They were collecting their hourly wage to try this case. And I found the judge was essentially in complete command and really did a wonderful job, as good as anybody else could do. But it was kind of enlightening for me right at the start that this judge had that kind of command. And I've actually drawn on him on a couple of occasions. And I thought something was interesting right in the beginning of this testimony, where it says that this gentleman here, Mr. Peter Hoyt, was here. It says he spoke favorably of Caroline Judge Harold Phoenix, who has been on the bench for 42 years and is arguably the most well-thought-of person in the town. Well, to me, you know, that speaks volumes about the value of the local court system, because it really suggests that a leading citizen like Judge Phoenix in his community is delivering the justice, I think, that the people in the community want. And I find when people come in summary proceedings or even on criminal matters, I think people feel comfortable with the idea that the person that's judging them has been elected in their community for that specific purpose. And I think going to this district court system would essentially eliminate that. It would just create another county judgeship in my mind, and would kind of impersonalize a lot that has to do with, I think, the delivery of justice. And I think you just indicated, Judge Phoenix, this is 110 years of the Magistrates Association, but I guess New York's history has been 200 years of local judges and local rule. And, you know, I see the benefit of that. The only other comment I wanted to make is, as an attorney of I've been around a while, I've seen a lot of judges in a lot of places, and I've been very impressed by all of the local judges here in Tompkins County. And I think when people talk about the district courts, they assume somehow that this attorney who's going to take over this district court is going to be somehow qualified or better qualified than any of the local duly elected judges in each of the communities. And as an attorney of long standing, I really, really question that premise.
Okay. Thank you, Judge Rebo. What I'd like to do then is to ask the committee members. We're going to start with Jason. We're going to start with Gwen, but she stepped out for a minute. So we'll start with Jason, and we're going to, each of us would ask a question or two of the panel, and then we'll keep going round and round and open it up. So Jason, you're first.
I didn't really have any questions. I was just really listening today. I really don't.
Okay,
not the moment. I mean, that's what I...
Well, right. Can I turn it around for a second, Mr. Slaughter? I have a question. I know you said that the comments don't or the questions, and I believe that. But like the first question on the list when I read it, how well do the local justice courts protect the due process rights of defendants in criminal proceedings? Are there members of the panel that would have a comment about that, about how they feel about answering that general question? You know, because, you know, as I said in my comments, and I think Bill said in his as well, you know, as local court judges, we certainly believe that that's precisely what we're doing every step of the way, is protecting the due process rights of the defendant.
Right, and I appreciate your request, but I'm going to overrule that. I don't even know how to do that.
Just did it.
I only know it from the other side.
You ought to be a judge.
I should try. I think the point was the questions were designed to elicit comment. In other words, how well are these due process rights protected? It's not to suggest that they are not.
No,
excuse me for interrupting, but our concern with stating those questions, and if you search the minutes of the committee, you'll find this, was to state them in such a fashion as to make sure that people got interested and gave us their commentary and came in here today and spoke. And that was the intention, and that was the whole of the intention.
Seems to have worked. When would I like to do, I can get the ball rolling if you want, but I was just trying to start it with other folks. Did you have a question you'd like to address to the panel, and then we'll...
Well, yeah, probably. I almost always have questions. I guess one question I have is just a structural question. And I don't know if town justices have the answer or whether the answer will come from Joe. Do the town justices have any presence in the Council of Government that created the body that is now us that's sitting
Good
here
question.
Listening to this testimony? Was there any representation from the magistrates on that?
No.
No.
Okay.
I don't even think there was representation from our town.
Okay. Then, I guess...
Did she show up? No.
I guess my question for all four candidates would be this.
Candidates.
Candidates.
Oh,
did I say
no.
Candidates?
What are we running for?
It's all that talk about running.
That was last year.
All right.
I don't want to see that again.
You don't want to do it again.
Listen, it's been a really long, long week. I apologize. But same question for all four judges. The portfolio of the justice courts is varied, as I think Judge Barr pointed out most articulately. There's small claims, there's other civil matters, there's criminal matters with trial jurisdiction up to the misdemeanor level, there's preliminary hearing jurisdiction over felony cases. As I understand it, our mandate would include any kind of realignment that could either cause economies, which I think we've decided is probably not likely, or maintain or enhance the quality and consistency of justice. So for each of you, do any of you feel that any of the kinds of cases that you preside over are better served by a non-law trained judge, better served by a law trained judge, instead of just looking at the whole ball of wax? For each of you, is there any part of it that you think law trained judges are better at, or law trained judges are worse at, or non-law trained, however you want to do it?
Well, I think that what we do is very broad, and that's part of the difficulty. So, and I can walk into court and something could have come up and I don't even know it's on my docket. And I actually have to study pretty hard, always, to keep everything, all my different balls in the air.
Okay.
And I'm honest, when I took that first judge class, I passed exams and I didn't even know what I was talking about. because it was so fast. It's like in 3 weeks they're trying to stuff everything in your head.
Right.
And so it was a learning curve, a very steep learning curve the first 2 years.
Okay.
But you got to study fast. You got to go to other courts and observe court. You got to do what you can do to get up to speed because there is so much law. And then we get all these emails all the time. We have all this stuff we have to read. Yeah. So I think it's hard because of the breadth, but I think that would be hard for anybody. I mean, lawyers specialize, and we have to stay broad.
Right. So do you think there's any of the pieces?
I see myself as an entry-level justice, and the things that I need to know how to do, I work very hard to stay on top of.
Okay. Thank you.
But I don't try to, you know, there's all this other stuff that I don't know anything about, and it's not my job.
Okay. Thank you.
I think if I could jump in for just a second, I think the answer to your question, I think everybody will, the other judges will agree to this, is just like every defendant is different, and every ADA is different, and every defense attorney is different, every judge is different as well. And so some judges will do very well, whether they're lawyers or non-lawyers, with summary proceedings, and some, whether they're a lawyer who might be a great lawyer or a great real estate lawyer, doesn't do well with summary proceedings because they have prejudices, whatever it is, whatever their bias is.
Right.
But it's really case by case for each of us, and each of us are trying to get better at the areas where we
hang on,
are
just
weak.
One second,
where
John.
We're weak. Well, you don't need to listen.
Gotta call you back.
Where we happen to be weak in an area, and you try to get stronger in that area and seek help. But that I don't think there's a blanket answer to that, to your question. I think we probably will all agree with that.
Okay. Well, I respectfully disagree that that's the question I asked. The question I asked is, of all the different parts of a local justice's duty, are there any parts that these people who have spoken to us feel would be better handled by a law-trained judge?
Yeah, that's what I understood your question to be, and I think the answer is, we don't know. A particular judge who's a lawyer and has experience in a particular area might be better at summary proceedings. I might be better at summary proceedings than another lawyer judge or another non-lawyer judge. It doesn't make a difference. Judge Barr may have, that might be an area that she is particularly interested in and has read, you, whatever that guy's name is that gives us the information, the judge wrote that book. She may have studied that from front to back and knows it inside out, and somebody described how somebody, a judge, a non-lawyer judge, was presiding at a summary proceeding and knew evidence better than the lawyers themselves. So it's I think I understand your question. I think the answer is, you can't answer it broadly like that. There are some areas where a particular non-lawyer judge would be just as good or better than a lawyer judge, etc. I don't think you can say broadly non-lawyer judges tend to be better at summary proceedings than lawyer judges tend to be better at traffic tickets.
Okay, so let's
hear. Okay, let me give you one. This judge's answer to your question, and I don't even know whether it has to do with lawyer or non-lawyer. DWI. Two reasons. One is they can be incredibly complex depending on whether somebody blew or didn't blow, whether they're brought in the middle of the night or whether they're given an appearance ticket, whether they show with a lawyer or they have to find a lawyer, etc. Second is I don't see them often enough to get comfortable with them. Okay?
Okay.
So if I saw them more often, I might give you a different answer. Maybe what this task force wants to do is to say, rather than create a district court, and I don't know what the rest of my co-judges say, maybe that is one area where there ought to be some centralization, a DWI court for the county. I throw that out and I leave it.
Okay, thank you.
Judge Phoenix?
I got to disagree with you.
Okay, but that's fine.
You know, DWI, you do one or two, you're if you're smart enough, you're going to figure it out.
Well, Judge Phoenix, you know, has been a judge for 42 years, back when we had three bars in the town.
Yeah, that's true.
It's been a lot. It's been a lot of DWIs.
But, you know,
76.
To me...
Yeah.
A lot of this is just plain common sense. You use common sense, you get through your decision, your whatever you're doing. And, you know, and no, everybody seems to be happy, so.
I think the other thing is, too, is if we have a question, we have resources. We have the Office of Court Administration who has attorneys that we can ask and get clarification on.
We have clerks, in effect, in Albany.
Yeah. I understand that, yes. Yeah. Thank you. That's valuable to think about in this context. Thank you, Judge.
Judge Rabel, did you have anything to say about that?
I agree with Judge Phoenix and Judge Salk. I mean, I think it really is on a case-by-case basis. And I think that's true. I struggled with the summary proceedings at first, and then that gentleman sent that book. He sent that book to everyone. And I also made sure I did, like, two judge CLEs on the summary proceedings because I wanted to get things straight. The part that I did know about it was the service requirements. And I did some research on that in order to decide whether, you know, whether it was a due diligence situation, because they use some strange verbiage in the real property actions and proceedings law with respect to that. And I just dealt a lot with that particular area, service or process issues. And what I discovered was a lot of the attorneys were not really up to snuff, whereas some of them, my local judges, my fellow judges, were very much right on target and had also done the same research I had done in a particular area. And, you know, and I agree with the other judges that, I mean, one of the things is in having the, like, for instance, the criminal cases and the DA there once a month, you can really focus in advance on getting down some of the, I mean, sometimes I don't know the particular laws, and I'm reading up because I want to make sure I'm up to snuff when I get in there. And I think that's exactly what Judge Phoenix was talking about, and Judge Salk too. You know, that's what you do. So I
can tell you what I struggle with right now. I'm struggling with young adults who are allegedly, potentially, they're arrested. What looks like opportunistic, didn't think. Crime, and now they're before me, doesn't have a credit card, doesn't own a car, live with grandma, and if I set bail, they're going to sit in jail, and I really struggle with that. That's what I'm struggling with right now, and I don't think any lawyer can help me answer that question.
But the law can help you answer that question. If they're not a flight risk, don't set bail.
Release them out of R.O.R.
Yeah.
Well, there's more. I actually had a felony in front of me because it.
You can R.O.R. a felony.
Yeah, I did that. I sent the day probation. I think the trooper wasn't happy with me, but the guy showed up again. So.
The troopers aren't always happy with me either.
Yeah, the judge wasn't.
Thank you. I just want to say, I think being a town judge, and there's a lot of great comments, reflects back to where you live and who you are. And I've lived in the town of Ulysses for 37 years. I know a lot of people in town of Ulysses, and going back to Judge Robles' comment about campaigning, door-to-door, you see 250, 300 people throughout your campaign while you're going door-to-door. You know your community. And you bring those resources with you to the bench. And you have people who come in, you know them, you know the family, you don't have any biases, or it's not a relationship issue, or relative. And you can base your decision about what you know about that family, what is best for that defendant. And I've had situations where the DA's office is recommending incarceration, and I don't go that route because I know the family. I think it's better served by a probationary type period instead of incarceration. And going back to our learning curve as far as our own personal education as far as being a judge, schools are fairly intense. We're required to go to 12 credits per year as far as Core A and Core B. But on top of that, there's still continuous education that I strive for every day. And as I go through my docket, if I have a question on a case, I research that case and bring myself up to speed before I hear that case. Now, I'll give you an example. I had my first DWI trial last week. I have over 40 hours of prep time myself for that trial. I hadn't had trouble before, and I want to make sure I had things in line as far as the basic fundamentals to perform that trial. And I have over 40 hours of prep time for that. And I'm proud to say that. I take the time, and I think all the judges here take the time, to do that research to serve the people where you live to the best that we can as a town judge.
Jason.
No, I do now have a question. It's not different from this, what you've been discussing the last couple of minutes, but do you think that the resource, basically, I sit on a town board in Dryden, okay? And we were fortunate enough to be able to provide two clerks in a court that had office hours that covers most of the week now. I think they've been cut back a little. But it's not the case in every town. So do you think that the ability of your town boards to support, for instance, you have one extreme in Dryden where the courts open basically 8:30 to 4:30 almost like every day versus Enfield or even the village of Freeville where the hours are much more reduced, the staff is less, and other resources are less. Like, how does that play into the fairness for your constituents that you've met during your door-to-door and everything else? What do you think? What do you think about that?
We're covered 4 days a week, 6 hours a day.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that each town has a different. Not every town's like that.
No, and that's one answer. That's all.
So, do you think that's an issue though that needs to be that could be addressed by something? It's a question of the question of resources and the ability of each town to provide a level of service.
When you answer that, could you, when you say 4 days a week, 6 hours a day, could you tell us what those hours are, like in the evening or Saturdays?
Well, they're it's Monday through Thursday, 10 to 4, except on Thursday when I have my court, then it's going to be until 6.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'm sorry.
Let me add something, too. I did something really crazy. I made it possible for people to pay tickets to the town clerk, which was not possible. I took number 10 envelopes, I bought them in a color yellow, and printed them up on my own little HP printer and said, okay, if you have a ticket and you want to pay it, fill out this information, seal it in the envelope, and give it to the clerk, and she puts it in our mailbox. So that, in one sense, extends the hours. It doesn't make the clerk available person to person, but.
Others who would like to answer that question? Question is resources, Judge Justice.
So the town of Ulysses, we have two judges. I have daytime court, Judge Lee has nighttime court. We have a full-time clerk, so it's beneficial there. But it's also the cost of operations that the town and we must look at. And I think if there was a different structure as far as the fine monies that are received by the courts, forwarded to the state, and what the county or what the town, especially the town, gets as far as reimbursement from the monies that we in fact collect as far as fines, would make a big difference as far as how the courts could operate in the different jurisdictions throughout Tompkins County. Because it's my opinion, that's a great burden for the court. It's a lot of out-of-pocket expenses for the taxpayers of that town to maintain that court when a lot of the money, and a lot of money goes to the state of New York, including the surcharges.
And the county.
And that we don't see much of a benefit of a return back for the operational costs of the court. Thank you.
Anybody else want to comment? All right. Judge Poole, do you have a question you'd like to
ask? I'm going to remain neutral here.
All right. Fair enough.
You're not neutral.
I'm not at all, but I'm going to remain, yes.
Mark, go ahead.
I'm getting old.
Me too.
But Mark Dresser looks much older, so it's okay.
Thank you.
Chris, did you want to say anything?
I did.
Well, come on, so say it.
So I've been around a couple days here and there, and it's important to me that you guys realize that I can see all the judges here that are just like me. But there's something out there that people aren't getting. And this is what I'm going to tell you, whether you're going to like it or you're not going to like it. You're not going to YouTube any one of these lay judges and find us standing telling a political statement that we're going to endorse somebody on the comments. That didn't happen. We don't do that. We know the rules. We know the regulations. We know how to do our jobs. We know the law inside and out. We go to school every year. We work hard. We study 40 hours a week because we've never had a DWI job. Those are things that, you know, I walk into the high school. Kids, hey, Judge, how you doing? Good to see you. Thanks for coming in to talk to our class. 24 years I've been talking to the same class. Unfortunately, some of them come see me on Monday nights. Hey, Judge, how you doing? They give me that same look. So it's important that, obviously, we all keep an open mind about this. I'm dead against it. I've been around for a while. And I want to be part of my community as a judge. And I hope that we all work together and make it so it stays. Whether if a DWI has to go to county court because that's what they want to do with it, I don't think the town and village court should go away. It'd be a sad day. So.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. I do have a question, but I wanted to make sure you got a chance to speak, because I know you might have a stroke if you wanted to talk and didn't get a chance.
I know, I'm like biting my lips off. Thank you.
You all have spoken in one way or another to the enormous value associated with your local knowledge and your knowledge of your people, the ones who elected you, the ones who didn't vote for you, but your community. You've spoken eloquently about it. And I would be the last person, I think, on this committee to disagree with that proposition. However, the people who appear before you are not all residents of your communities. And sometimes those people have interests that are in conflict with the interests of people in your communities. Sometimes they don't look like the people in your communities. Sometimes they don't talk like the people in your communities. Sometimes they're smart asses and nasty. Do you think it is appropriate for people who are, as you are, steeped in your communities, born, in many cases bred, in other cases just long-time residents, do you think it is appropriate for you to sit here and tell us how important it is that you are local when the person appearing before you is anything but local? Is that, would you concede, sometimes a problem, any of you?
No.
Absolutely
never.
Not.
Never.
Never.
No, because when you have a person come in front of you, you base everything on what has been presented to you, the case. You give them the right.
Unlike when the person is a local resident and you know the family and you know the person and you know what's good for the family and you know what's good for the community. So there is a distinction. Have I understood you correctly?
You base everything on what is presented before you, how long they've had ties to the community, or how long they've worked at a job. And it goes for either a community member or a person who's not a community member.
Well, as a former criminal defense attorney, I can tell you that I enjoyed my years in the justice courts a great deal. But unfortunately, the relationships I cultivated with those judges ended when they died. And then I stopped doing criminal defense work, so I didn't. Judge Phoenix, I appeared before you, had a lot of fun with you. Nice thing about Judge Phoenix was, and that I remember with great clarity, when he didn't know something, he told you he didn't know it. And was willing to ask a defense attorney, was that the way that, nice thing about Judge Clausen, he would know his limitations and acknowledge them. Markey, I don't know. I never appeared before you.
Markey?
Judge Drescher.
He called you all. Now he's making me young.
Yeah. And I can tell you, I won't talk about judges in Pompous County. I can talk about judges in other counties. And when my client was a Tompkins County resident, or a Cornell kid from Onondaga County, or Monroe County, appearing in front of a town justice where there weren't a lot of Onondaga County people and a lot of Cornell people, it made a difference, and it wasn't a good difference. So I'm surprised that none of you will acknowledge that sometimes that's a problem.
Of course it is. Of course it is. But we try.
Absolutely.
I try.
Absolutely.
I try.
I would, absolutely, yes.
Now, hold on. Okay. Because when you're looking at a speeding ticket and it says New Jersey, and it's 90 and a 55.
How can you be objective?
It says New Jersey.
I agree.
They got a lot of money in New Jersey is what I think.
In New Jersey, the traffic laws are optional.
That's what I said. So the 90 and a 55 may cost them a little more money in Dryden Town Court than from New Jersey. Well,
thank you, Chris.
I'm just being honest.
I expect nothing less from you.
I think you raise an excellent and a very interesting point, Mr. Solomon. But, I mean, that's, I think, one of the challenges of being a judge at any level, whether it be the local level or the state level or even on the Court of Appeals. The challenge is always there, and obviously everyone may have a bias or a prejudice.
Good point.
They need to overlook that. But, for instance, say at the district court level, I think, you know, we would be here in Tompkins County, I think that you would have that same issue. So whether the judge is a local judge or a district court judge or a county court judge, I think you're always battling that, whatever bias you might have, and obviously we're all trying to put that aside.
Thank you.
Liz?
So a couple of my questions have already been answered and asked, but I'll just say that I'm the least experienced. I'm a town supervisor from the town of Ulysses, and I think I've gone not in front of Judge Dresser's court, but previous. So, and not me. It was just to listen in the back to see how to see what happens in the court. Because, as one who sets the budget, I felt like I should know something. But it's hard. It's hard for us.
It doesn't bother most politicians as far as I know.
It's hard.
Yeah, but you're really good with waterworks.
Yeah, right. So the objective of having someone like me here, which is what I questioned at the very beginning, is, you know, why me? I don't know anything about the court system here. But I will, you know, report back to others that are my colleagues. And so the charge, as I understood it, was just to emphasize it, is to listen. And what I heard from the people who were before us at the last meeting was not necessarily that it was better to have an attorney justice or a non-attorney justice. It seemed to me that the training was very important and the oversight, and it seems to me that that's what I'm hearing from all of you too. It's not necessarily that you have that credential of being an attorney, but that you are, you know, willing to do the training and have the proper oversight to make sure that the training was done. So that's just sort of a comment that maybe you can report back to about. But one of the other comments that seemed to come up from the last meeting too, and maybe this one, is that perhaps some of the criminal cases are better served at a different level. I haven't really heard that the town and village courts should go away altogether. I mean, I guess we have heard that, but that doesn't seem to be the leaning. It seems like the concern is mostly involved around the criminal issues, and so and you did speak to that, and it does seem like there's maybe some consideration of that being moved to a more centralized place. But I guess that what Mark just said is how important is it to know your community. That was one of the things that keeps on sort of niggling at me is, Well, how does that? It seems to me that justice should be served on the basis of what is put before you, and not who your father was, or not who your sister was. Or, I mean, that seems like it might be an impediment as much as something that is a positive. So those are just my observations. And again, I certainly don't have any feelings one way or another about which way we should go, consolidation or not, or district court or not, or parts of it or not, but I'm certainly interested in hearing more. This is a learning experience, and I will bring back this information to the Council of Governments as well.
So, yes, Judge Poole.
Yes, just to clarify, you mentioned in there that you thought that they were indicating to you that criminal should be moved?
Well, and this is my ignorance, but maybe some of the...
Okay, I believe Judge Chernish in his statement indicated, or not no, in your statement, but in discussion, indicated DWI.
Well, I said DWI in my discussion. In my presentation, I mentioned felonies. And felony arraignments take place at the local level, and then they go to county court. Now, interestingly enough, there was, I saw a case that was arraigned in my court, went to county court. The district attorney sent it back down as a misdemeanor. And I don't know, and I'm not going to speculate, as to whether or not it was overcharged or the charge reduced. But apparently, I'm not going to ask her, there was sufficient confidence in the district attorney's office that it could be handled appropriately in my court.
As a misdemeanor.
I don't want any criminal case taken from me. I don't want anything taken from Dryden Town Court. No. I want it all to stay there.
Okay.
I'll clarify it.
Okay.
But there's a clear difference between felonies and misdemeanors, and the book is that thick. You know.
And the felonies, it's mandatory that they be to county after the preliminary jurisdiction.
Okay. With respect to your first point, I was curious. What I thought you said was that you got that impression last week that the testimony
for
the last whenever the last meeting of the panel was. That you got the impression, I presume, from those witnesses that they felt the criminal cases should be removed from the local court.
That's a fair statement.
That's fair, yeah.
So I guess my question to you first would be, what gave you that impression? Or, I mean,
we're running out of time.
I agree with Judge Clausen. As to your second point with respect to knowing people in the community, you know, so much of what goes through the town courts, summary proceedings and all of that, I think the people in the local courts who come in are very comfortable pleading their case or telling their problem to the local judges. And some nights I sit there for quite a bit of time to give people the opportunity to say their piece. Judge Clausen stuck me with the dog cases, which is an experience in its own right. But again, I guess I would answer you the same way the comment I made to Mr. Solomon, which is that there's always bias. You know, there's always, we're human beings. Of course, every judge, every person that comes into a courtroom, even all the jurors, when they come in, oh, can you be fair? Yeah, of course, I'm the fairest person in the world. But we all carry a bias. The idea behind it is you have to try to eliminate all of those biases, and I think that's what everybody works very hard in trying to do.
So. Judge Galbraith, please.
I'd like to shift the focus entirely. Conversation so far has been, I think it's put the justices on the defensive, and I'd like to shift from that. I'd like you to identify any changes, any suggestions you have, any differences that we could recommend to the county that would either improve the justice system or save money. Chris.
Immediate arraignments. I could say that you could save money if we had a lockup, not a justice center. See them in the morning. Put them in that, they arrest, put them in the morning. Then I don't have an attorney coming out for a couple hours while I wait for the police department to come to my courtroom for a couple hours. There's a lot. That in itself would save money. Closing down the courts, I'm a defensive? Yeah, maybe a little, but it's my job, I like it. But that's one of the things. I just feel that arraignments, I bet you I could find 7 judges that would do arraignments at 8 o'clock in the morning on an on-call basis, line them up. Mm-hmm. I know I could find them. But I think there's a law, Kenny's not here, there's a law about that's a correctional facility, not a jail, so we don't have lockup centers. So, that's
you're
how
speaking
I would
of
save
a
money.
Holding cell.
Holding cell, yep. That's how I'd save money.
Okay, that's one. Do we have others on the panel here?
Well, I have something, but I think the other guys.
Go ahead.
I know what in glancing through some of this, and I read some of it last week as well. We talk about worrying about consistency. And the fact that somehow a district court is gonna somehow create some more consistency, presumably because there's one judge as opposed to 13 judges. But one of the improvements that I think could be made is a little bit, you know, maybe a little bit more communication with respect to judges are not supposed to have policies, but the district attorney's office sometimes has policies. So I think we all need to work together with respect to that. And I'll give you an example. I think I've been doing this long enough to know when a kid has made a mistake, you know, just from your own life experiences. You don't have to be an attorney to figure that one out. Just from your own life experiences, you know, some kid takes $10 out of the till and loses their job, and they're 19 years old, and they're, you know, they're a sophomore in college, and the last thing you want to see them do is plead guilty to a B misdemeanor or an A misdemeanor. And I've sat here, you know, and I look at it and I say, 40 years of life experiences tell me that this kid's not going to commit another crime. This case cries out for an ACD. But unfortunately, we have inconsistent application of those rules in each of the justice courts. And I'm not talking about the judges, because the judges have to judge each case on its own merits and what they feel is the appropriate disposition. What I'm talking about is if you go into the city and you pull the $5 out of the till, you're guaranteed an ACD. If you come to Dryden and you pull the $5 out of the till, you got to plead guilty to a B misdemeanor or try the case. And somehow,
ACD on Mondays.
That's an extremely inconsistent result from one place to another. And it's not caused by the judges, because I think every one of us would agree that that case is an ACD. But we don't have the discretion to give that ACD.
You'd say the same thing about traffic offenses, wouldn't you?
I would.
That we would need more discretion. Yeah, the only time we have discretion. But traffic is traffic. I mean, there's a lot of ways to deal with it.
I interrupted you.
But I'm talking about, like, the ACD thing has, I guess, become my pet peeve the last year or so, because it is inconsistently applied throughout the county. Now, I've had some people in my court that have had that have been accused of worse crimes, who maybe don't deserve an ACD, but then they may be given one. So if somebody wants to give out an ACD, I'm not going to stop.
Judge, I'm going to interrupt you, please, but I'm going to ask, are there other suggestions?
I've got two. One, I think, is in the realm of impossible, but the one that might shake up some of my fellows is, I would be delighted to have somebody come in and sit in review of my work. You know, I spent 20 years in a university classroom, and on a regular basis, I had somebody come in and say, how you doing, and providing feedback. I have reached out to the defense bar, and I have reached out to the prosecutor, and say, how am I doing? And I've gotten some useful information, but I don't think it's complete information, because these folks, you know, are going to see me again, so they may be a little bit reticent. But for some objective feedback and ways in which I could improve, I would be grateful. Some of my co-judges would say, no, don't do that to me. But I think that's one thing. The other thing that just bugs me is the fact that people who get vehicle traffic violations, if they know the secret, they're going to get them reduced. If they're from out of state, if they don't know the secret, they're going to pay the full freight. And I don't know whether, I mean, it seemed to me I've lived in places where a representative of law could take the oath and represent all officers of the law at a trial, bench trial. And so you could have trial day, and everybody could come in there, rather than having every person who protests the ticket have it reduced by the district attorney by one notch. That's the way it works, and that's the way it has been. I don't know whether it's possible, but it's something that strikes me as being grossly unfair to those who are not in the know, and that's my say.
Are there other ideas? Because I think it's a good question, and this is the kind of stuff that we need to really hear. Do others have ideas? If there were things that could be done to improve efficiencies or to make life easier or better or smarter, or, you know, whatever, in the local courts, what would you be recommending? What would you want us to recommend?
Oh, well, I think that we still have a little bit more work to do with this after-hours arraignment and assigned counsel. It's coming along, but there's still some work to be done to make it more effective and efficient.
I mean, there was some discussion, or there has been discussion, I know, about centralized booking area. That was mentioned, I think, the last time. What are some of your thoughts about that? Do you think it works? Doesn't work? Judge Clausen?
Yeah, you know, another thing, one of those, it seems like on every judge I looked around here a little bit, we all have smartphones. I'm not opposed to doing a video arraignment. And Skype, YouTube, or whatever it is, via the sheriff's department, with an on-call attorney on the other end. I don't know if that's out there, but I would do that right from my house, no problem. I think that technology today, we would save money, time, gas, effort. You'd have to fax in whatever, ROR slip, a securing order, you'd be done.
Any other? Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You were about to say something.
I forgot what I was going
to say. Sorry. It happens all the time.
Were there any other ideas that folks have? Okay, I would. I have a couple of questions, and these will only require short answers, but frankly, I'm interested in data, but in this case, anecdotal data. So I'm just trying to get a sense of your caseloads, not so much numbers of cases as amount of time you spend in particular kinds of cases. So for instance, I'm interested in about how much time you spend a week as judges, and then how much of that is spent in small claims. You know, just give me some percentages. Just get a sense of this. How much of that time is spent in small claims? How much is spent in vehicle and traffic other than DWI? How much of that is spent in felony kinds of arraignments? How much of that is spent in misdemeanor cases? How much is spent in trial? Now just give me a sense of how this time is broken down, because it would help us get a sense of where you are putting your time as a town justice. So anybody can grab that and run with it. Maybe take a week.
Well,
Judge Turner.
Well, I'm putting together a grant proposal now, which asks for that information. So let me share it with you when it's assembled.
All right.
It's got 3 years worth of data for our town court.
But I'm not as, I mean, the data is helpful.
Yeah.
I want the data, but I'm thinking it.
I can extrapolate some time to go with it,
okay.
Too.
All right. Judge Feeney?
I figure I spend about 15 hours a week as a rule, and probably 90% of that is traffic, 7% on misdemeanors, and the other 3% would be for small claims and any other civil.
The town of Danby is similar to that. I'm Judge Huddle.
Judge Huddle.
I figure we have about 75% of our time is vehicle and traffic, and about 7% also for misdemeanors, and the rest would be either zoning law, town law, job cases,
Park Police or the DEC.
When you say traffic, does that include DWI or is that non, everything but DWI?
That would include DWI.
That would include DWI. So can you give me a breakout of that, of that 75%? Is it?
Yeah, we probably, maybe 2 a month we get DWIs, something like that, DWIs.
And Judge Hutto, how many hours a week do you typically spend as a judge?
I would say I'd spend probably close to 20 a week down there.
And if you could also let me know, how often do you guys, do you folks have a jury trial, or any kind of a, let's say a jury trial in your court?
I've had 3 jury trials. I've been on the bench for 8 years. This is my week. We have 2 bench trials this week. Tomorrow.
I guess I'll go. I'm in the tiny village of Freeville, a small house, probably 4 hours a week. And I would say 90% of vehicle and traffic. I've probably had 2 jury trials in 25 years.
Judge Jester?
It's about the same for the town you listed. I figure probably 95% between traffic and DWI, and it's broken down other civil matters, whether it's small claims, summary, or other, even including weddings.
So you mentioned you had you're gearing up for your first DWI trial.
I had it last
trial.
Week.
Is that, how many other jury trials?
That's it. In 4 years, one.
One. Right.
Typically, they're resolved. I would say that the most time-consuming cases that we have, that I have, is DWIs. By the time they work themselves through the system, every pretrial, you know, the case is discussed, we're here, next pretrial, we're here, next pretrial, we're here, and then finally comes the resolution as far as the sentencing. So DWIs are very timely for the courts. I also handle a lot of criminal cases. I think right now I have 34 on my docket, which is not a lot compared to some courts, but for the town of Ulysses, that's strictly criminal cases.
Okay. And how many hours a week, Judge Dresser, do you generally spend as a judge?
15 to 20 hours a week, but that's at my own discretion. I feel diligent about going there usually every day, check on the court clerk, look at what I have on my desk, and just making, you know, you're in charge of your office.
Anybody else want to, Judge
Carson? I have something real quick. What I've done in Dragontown Court is, with the assigned counsel program, I get those folks there at 4 o'clock, I try to get them out. They're the first ones I see. And in and out, so they're going on to the next court. That's one of those things that we could coordinate maybe with assigned counsel is, all right, this is your pretrial day, you got to be there at 5 o'clock because they're in my court at 4. I rush them in and out of there. So that seems to work once we've got that down. Took a while, but now everyone knows assigned counsel comes in at 4, and it's first come, first serve. So Mr. Keel, he's usually about 4:40. So he comes in a little late. Yeah, he's already been. But so that's really important. I think that saves the county a ton of money. And it's the assigned counsel people are very they're welcoming to it because they know they're going to get in and get out and then get to Groton or wherever they're going next. So
Judge Klassen, if I may, how many hours can you mind sharing about how many hours a week you spend as
24/7, Ben.
I appreciate it, but seriously.
Seriously, I would say 15.
All right. And
15 to 20, depending on the week. I mean, that's ugly in driving.
And what's your sense? Again, just this is anecdotal, but of your time that you spend, how much of that is the vehicle traffic? How much is criminal? How much is DWI? How much civil?
I think that in my court I do... Thank God I don't do dog cases. Judge Robin gets those. I bet I do half V&Ts. So half my time spent that day.
Including DWI?
No. Because you know what? I rate that. Those are misdemeanor charges, so it's more of a criminal issue than a DWI, vehicle and traffic. Then I think probably 25% criminal. And the rest, small claims, some traffic trials. Basically, I bet you I have 5 trials on Monday night. Some don't show up. But that's what I get.
And what's your, in terms of jury trials, on an annual basis or approximate?
None. So let me tell you, though, I have Serdell in my court. Right. If he can't win, he's not going. Right? So, I mean, that's his motto.
All right, does anybody else want to give us?
I'll give you mine.
Judge Poole, yes, please.
I'll give you mine.
Yeah.
I'm kind of off a little bit. I don't know, maybe Enfield's unique. But, misdemeanors, my caseload's about 30%. I get a lot of domestics and some nasty people out there. Civil, 20%. And I have to say V&T's about 50%.
I'm sorry, the last one?
V&T's 50%. I spend about 20 hours a week. And again, I agree with Chris, it depends. You know, that certainly fluctuates. 24 years on the bench, zero jury trials.
Well, we almost had one once.
Yeah.
With you and I.
Yes, that's right.
Horseshoes and hand grenades.
Two to 10 hours a week.
Which is a good idea.
80% V&T, 15% criminal, 10%, you can put them in either of those categories, or DWIs. Small claims, 1 to 5% of my time. Trials, I've had as many as 120 in a year, down to 20. Couple jury trials over the years.
Jury trials, Glenn? 120?
No.
Trials. Bench trials.
Bench trials.
He has a policy.
All right.
Yeah. He has a policy that makes them
eligible. I know you have that policy.
Oh, no.
You have a bias.
The other question I...
He has a five-way stop sign.
No.
Julie?
Ask him. He'll explain it.
Judge Poole spoke about his court on Monday at 4 o'clock. On Monday at 4 o'clock, starting at 4 o'clock, there are five courts in session. Ulysses, Dryden, Enfield, Caroline, and Groton. At five different ends of the county. And I'm going to give you this data, Ray, because I have it all, and I'm going to give it to the committee. There are 20, on an average, 20 attorneys that night. And they're going to five different corners of the county. They're paid travel time, mileage, and the time they sit in court. And I'm going to break it down by day on each court meets, and I'll give you that. Dryden is the biggest justice court in the land. So most of them will be in Dryden. But then they have to go to Ulysses, and then they have to go to Enfield, or then they have to go to Groton. And I'll give you the travel time and the mileage and the travel expenses for which it is. So that's the biggest night of the whole week, is Monday.
That's fair. One other, we'll look forward to that presentation. I want to follow up in just one other area.
Do you want me to give you my...
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
In 18 months, I've done one jury trial, three bench trials, and we did kind of like a trial term thing where we backed up two or three jury trials, and those cases then were disposed of the week or two beforehand. Like Chris, for me it depends on the whether it's a DA night. A DA night, I get there usually about 11 o'clock in the morning to go through all the files. There's a lot of criminal cases. And so I'm there from 11 till probably about 9 at night on the DA night. So that's whatever it is. That's 10 hours, 11 hours. And so the other nights are not. So, yeah, it's probably an average of about 15 hours. On a DA night, the criminal cases really outweigh all the others, including the... We don't schedule anything other than criminal and traffic so that we can dispose of as many traffic cases as possible.
And what's the percentage breakdown? Just in rough terms?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Okay, that's fair.
I really don't.
Okay.
Do you know if you have more criminal than vehicle and traffic?
On a DA night, I would say, yeah. Okay. There's more criminal than... Because sometimes you can dispose of some of the others, and obviously the people plead guilty to the...
One other area, because we are getting late, and I want to just get your quick take, quick take on electronic records, and whether you think that if we had some sort of an electronic record system that the justice courts would be a part of, along with, you know, in other words, that, so that motions could be filed that way, appearances could perhaps occur that way. In other words, there could be a lot more trafficking, if you will, commerce, whatever you want to call it, but the use of electronic record systems. You see something like that helping or hindering, or, I mean, obviously there would be a steep learning curve for all of us, but just curious.
Yes, and we are, Newfield is, crazy as it sounds, moving ahead and going paperless. And we're, part of our grant proposal is to become paperless in 2016. We're playing with it now. We have an unauthorized scanner that I contributed, and we're trying, and we're going to go down and visit the town of Kirkwood. In a couple of weeks, where they've been doing it, and hope to make it happen.
Any other comments on that from the judges? Yes.
It may be a great thing to be talking about. However, I got called in last night at 4:00. And the electricity was out. And so, you know, what good is that going to do me?
Get a generator.
Well, you talk to the town. They won't even heat the building.
I know.
Is this for the public?
Or is this just because
our court program
we have
presently has a scanning capability to scan all of the criminal records and whatever, into the doc?
There's a free program that works better.
Yes, Jason.
I do. I'm going to bounce off of this thing. It's something I just thought of. But it's almost universal in the difference that I find between the city court and the justice courts. When I do pretrial conferences in city court, my client doesn't need to be there. When I do them in a justice court, almost universally, they need to be there, as a presumed to be there. There are times when if I ask permission for the client to be excused, but generally, the justice is all when our client's there. I don't know what why. Because sometimes conferences are, I think, more productive when the clients aren't there.
Ask me.
So why?
Well, I'll tell you one reason why. Because half the time the case is resolved then, and I want to sentence them and get them out of there.
Exactly.
I want to get it done. Mm-hmm. Plus, I want the client to understand that they've got a role in this.
That's right.
And if you've got to come out, they should allow to come out. Unless there's a special reason. In which case, great. I'll excuse clients all the time. But.
As a follow-up, Judge, do you think, I mean, I know you're on the panel, but you're a judge. Do you think that's because so few cases go to jury trials in the justice courts?
Yeah, well, that's one reason. Or any trial, for that matter.
Okay.
I mean, the fact that I had 120 trials 1 year, none of those even involved attorneys.
Do you do Lafleur hearings with misdemeanor cases?
Where the attorney appears with...
Where the issue is addressed in court on the record, whether or not the defendant has received competent counsel with respect to the plea bargain.
Oh, boy.
It's absolutely required. And you have to have the client there to do it.
Yes.
In felony court, we have a special thing for it when defendants are likely to reject a plea offer. But I believe Lafleur extends to misdemeanors. It's not just...
That is a conversation to
for
be...
For another time,
another
yes.
time. But we are not finished, obviously, with this conversation. There's going to be another evening where we would invite all of you to return. If others wish to speak and be heard, or you wish to submit comments, we'd appreciate that. There's a lot of work to be done. There are a lot of areas that we didn't touch on at all, but which... in terms of how can we find the efficiencies, if there are any, or should we be recommending? Who knows? But we'd love to hear your thoughts and comments.
Ray, just make sure nobody else has anything to say about the question you raised about electronics.
Is there anybody else that wishes to make a statement about electronic records?
Would anybody think it would help you?
I'm a little... The question that you presented, you threw in there motions, And
yeah, I'm not, Judge, I'm not even sure the parameters, but I know that it appears that if we had, for instance, in civil cases, the evictions and what have you, there was a concern about, that was raised last 2 weeks ago, getting access to the forms, filing them, getting them to the court, all of which in some courts, because there are limited hours, they can't get these papers filed until the day of, and that may not be timely. And so the issue was, if there was some sort of an electronic record system, then some things could be filed that way. It wouldn't necessarily require a personal appearance to actually accomplish that.
So as far as the, I'm not a big fan of having the motions electronically filed. I prefer to have those in my possession. But evictions and things that Judge Ravel deals with, and yeah, we have a Dropbox. So.
Yeah, I noted that comment, and it seemed to me that there was one of a number of procedural issues that could have been addressed or could be addressed on a case by case or court by court basis. And the setting was, this court is available Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, not Thursday, Friday. So, I mean, and just as Chris is available 24/7, so am I.
Yeah.
We all are.
Yeah.
We know. In fact, right. We're familiar with it. Okay, fair enough. We will continue this discussion and hopefully come to some intelligent conclusions by next spring. Thank you very much for coming.
Please remember that the state president is going to be here to speak on November 18th, and I would really like your presence if at all possible.
Just for the record, the next meeting is October 14th at 4:30. This time the county is
thank you.
Getting us back their chambers, so we are going to be there. The stakeholder presentations will be by local attorneys.
Stop there.